You're listening to How You Doin' Bay County, a Mental Health Matters podcast with a local twist. Hey, how you doing, Bay County? I'm Amy Bright, Executive Director at Alignment Bay County, otherwise known as ABC. And co-hosting with me today is Dr. Melissa Strauser from Counterbalance Visionaries. Hey, Melissa, welcome.
Hey, how are you, Amy?
I'm good. Thank you. Good. Thank you for asking, and thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting.
I really appreciate having you here. And if Melissa's name and voice sounds familiar, then you've probably heard the episode where we had her on as a podcast guest. That was episode 16. So if you haven't listened to it, I encourage you to jump back to it and give it a listen and let us know what you think.
Yeah, thanks, Amy.
Sure. So today, before we jump into our topic, I wanted to share a little background information on how this podcast came to be. How You Doin' Bay County is an initiative by Alignment Bay County, and we're a local, nonprofit, collective impact organization. We're focused on youth success from cradle to career, and one way we do that is by supporting families and our community as a whole. Well, you know, it's no secret. We've had a rough couple of years, and I'm thinking, you know, it's been a rough few years now as we come up on the third anniversary of Hurricane Michael. And one thing that we and our partner organizations have observed was that after the traumatic events in our community, both children and adults struggled with their mental health and positive well-being. And the other thing that we noticed is friends, acquaintances, neighbors checking in on each other and asking, how you doing? That question, along with this ongoing stress of hurricane recovery and a pandemic that, well, I feel like it's never going to end, that inspired us to create a local mental health resource. First, a website, howyoudoin.org, which has a local behavioral health directory, as well as other resources for children and adults, and this podcast, How You Doin' Bay County. Our goal is to make finding behavioral health resources easier for our community and bring awareness that your mental health matters. So on today's episode, we're talking with Chris Hockman from the Oxford House. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. Thanks. Thanks for asking. Welcome, and so we're so glad to have you on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about Oxford House and your role there.
So, Oxford Houses are democratically run, self-run, self-supporting addiction recovery housing. They are transitional housing for the most part. The first Oxford House was opened in Silver Spring, Maryland, 1975, by a gentleman named Paul Malloy, who was a former politician and alcoholic in recovery.
Okay.
He was living in a state-funded sober home that was about to shut its doors, and he made some calls along with the members there. They acquired a small loan, and thus the first Oxford House was born. Out of necessity, obviously, because there's quite a few alcoholics and addicts in the world, the need was there.
Yeah.
So they ended up pulling a loan for another house, and that's how the ball got rolling. There is a serious need for housing. So, typically the houses and chapters all come together. They'll loan, they keep the ball rolling, opening up house after house after house to meet the need. So everybody has a bed if possible. When all of our houses stay full, which mine do for the most part here, I open another house, and my job is outreach worker for Oxford House. And that is expansion, networking, which is what I'm doing now, and educating my members so they can run the best house possible. And then, you know, the expansion part is opening houses. We don't open our houses in, you know, seedy neighborhoods.
Right.
We do like nice neighborhoods because I think it's pretty obvious if you put addicts and alcoholics back into, you know, the hood, so to speak.
Yeah.
It's going to be really challenging, right? It is. So that's where some of the pushback we get comes in. You know?
So let's talk about some of the pushback that maybe we've heard in here in Panama City. Doing what I do and my involvement with Alignment Bay County and just my background, I think I'm probably a little bit more open and understanding of what the needs are. And but why don't you tell us a little bit about what happened here in Panama City?
So we had already had a house here in 2000, I think 2020, we opened the first house here.
It was
just one.
Okay.
And it had been there. Nobody knew it was there. Nobody knew it was an Oxford House.
Okay.
Right. I had opened my next house whenever I came back from Arizona, which is the house that I currently reside in. And while I had opened, while I was in the process of opening that house, the house that was next door to it was up for sale. It was owned by a brother and a sister who bought and flipped houses. So
it was a second house in Panama City next.
It was next door to my second house.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was over there checking the mail one day. I was had some work being done on the house, and this guy stops me while I'm leaving.
Uh-huh.
And he starts grilling me about Oxford House. And, you know, I'm always happy to answer questions as long as, you know, there's no ill intent in the future, which his motives were clearly not nice. So then his sister walks up a few minutes later, and she's like, "You must be Chris Hockman." You know, my man, I have a look on my face like, I know you, and I don't know this lady. So she had been stalking me all around Panama City trying to find out who I was. She found out who I was, and they started calling code enforcement, which our houses don't require any specific coding. She started calling, you know, the commissioner's office, city council. Well, it wasn't until I opened my women and children's house that it really got bad. The lady that was across the street from my women and children's house, I did the same thing. She came over there. I was meeting with a contractor. She asked me, "Oh, are you the new homeowner?" And I was like, "Well, you know, kind of." When she had this look like, "What do you mean, kind of?" Well, I answered questions against my better judgment, judging from the previous experience. I shouldn't have, but I like to be nice.
Yeah.
You know, I shouldn't be able to be nice without.
Well, and it's suspicious if people, you know, you're not friendly and answering questions.
Right.
At the,
And
you
being
know?
Open.
Yeah.
You're hoping everyone will be open to,
exactly.
you know, having those individuals in the Oxford House.
Yeah. And let me start by saying this. I understand people's concerns. I do. I understand you're concerned about a sober living home coming to your neighborhood, and you're concerned about your children's well-being, your property value. I get all of it.
Yeah.
But the reality of it is our houses are some of the nicest houses on the block.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The yards are maintained. The houses, if they have any issues, are taken care of. So that being said, the lady, after having the conversation, she went out and called everybody in the neighborhood. Everybody
wow.
and they started driving by the house one by one, and she's pointing at the house like, "Yeah, they're turning this house into a sober." And Senator Gaynor, who was a previous senator, lives in that neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And then they got the news involved, and that news reel aired, and some of the things they were griping about, like, that's nine more women or people flushing the toilet. And like, is that your only concern? Is the toilet really? Like, how about be a little more understanding? And the thing about our model is we have a zero tolerance policy. So if you drink or return to active use in any way, you're gone. Yes, the House does officially take a vote, but you're still leaving per their three mandatory charters they have to follow.
Yeah.
They have to be self-supporting. They have to be democratically run. And they must expel anybody that returns to active use.
Mm-hmm.
So that and you're required to abide by all laws while living in the House. That all laws. So, like, my house, prime example, a dude was driving with no license. They muzzled that and fast.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't obeying the laws.
Yeah.
And we don't have to, like, the thing about addicts and alcoholics, we're very manipulative, very intelligent people.
Yeah.
Most people don't understand that. Like, I was a 20-year junkie and alcoholic.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a dummy by any means.
No.
And if I want to get around something, I'll make it happen.
Yeah.
And most of us can. So our peer supportive environment is meant for people with lived experience to hold each other accountable.
Uh-huh.
You know, if a dude walks into the mandatory weekly house meeting, which every house has, and he doesn't have his weekly EES, which is like their rent. It's, you know, we call it EES for equal expenses shared.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got a brand new cell phone and shoes on his feet. Yeah, man, there's going to be some questions.
Yeah.
So, and that's what it's designed for, to teach that we have elected house officers which help with the functionality of the home. There are no house managers in our houses. Yes, I work for Oxford House, but I can't tell the houses what to do. They take votes on everything. Every member that lives in that house has a vote.
Yeah.
So I try to empower all my members to use their voice.
Yeah.
You know, hey, man, if something's bothering you, get it off your chest. Don't stew over it. It's going to escalate if you do.
Right.
But back to the newsreel. It didn't stop with the one. Uh-huh. Then they aired another one. Oh. And they just kept dragging us through the mud. It was all negative. We don't want these houses here. It's going to do this. And now they're hiring private attorneys to do independent studies about Oxford or sober livings and Bay County, and now they got another attorney coming in trying to talk about land usage, and no, y'all can't open more houses. And they're, you know, look, we don't look like the bad ones at this point. I think it's pretty clear to the community who's got the egg on their face.
Yeah.
Because my folks turn out to help the community. We're not a drain on the community either.
Yeah.
We are self-supporting.
Yeah.
The house is, they do acquire a loan to initially open the home, but they pay that loan back inside of Oxford House. It's a revolving loan.
Uh-huh.
And right. Then, so the loan they pay back is the next house, and then it just keeps revolving. So, you know, half these other sober living homes, they get federal funding, state funding, you know, or they have owners or managers that run their homes, you know, and I'm not bagging on anybody's program,
right.
But it,
if, your program is very different.
It is very different. It's a very unique model. And I'll be honest with you. When I was in rehab coming out, or while mm-hmm. I was in rehab, I heard so many horror stories about Oxford House. But I'm also in rehab around a bunch of addicts and alcoholics that got expelled for
sure.
relapse.
Yeah, right.
So I'm only hearing that side.
Yeah.
Well, when I was set to be discharged, Oxford House was last on my list. I had nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. My family was not letting me anywhere in sight. My wife wasn't having me around. My children weren't having me around. My mother, my brother, nobody. Mm-hmm. So Oxford House was my last call, and we called Michael McKeough, who is now my supervisor. He was my outreach worker in Tallahassee. He had just opened Oxford House Firefly, mm-hmm. and I was the first member admitted into that house. And, I mean, I didn't know what I was getting into. I just know, hey, man, you got to work. You got to do your chores. You got to pay your bills. Be responsible. I did that.
Yeah.
And I started sitting in the bar. One day he was at our house meeting, and I was like, how'd you get into what you do, man?
Yeah. So it's right. turned into a career for you.
It has.
That's really exciting.
A very rewarding career.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, not only do I get to help people, but I get to get paid doing it.
Yeah. Gosh, that's the dream for anyone, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
I think so.
And I think that's a really inspiring story because this is, you know, you've gone from a really hard time, you know, to turning that into a very powerful message for yourself.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing we like to do on the podcast is address these stigmas. And a lot of times, you know, we hear the phrase end the stigma. And, you know, when I was thinking about it the other day, I thought, you know, we've never really defined that. You know, like mm-hmm. we can say it, but what does it really mean? So, Chris, I was hoping you might speak a little bit to that. Like, what does the stigma mean? And let's address some of these false beliefs surrounding substance abuse and recovery.
So, I think for me, you know, so my sponsor had me write an essay when I first started using it about what I thought alcoholism was. And,
uh-huh.
you know, for me, alcoholism is not only alcoholism, but addiction itself is a disease.
Yeah.
Mind, body, spirit, and all of it. But the stigma for me and my perception of it is when people look at us, they see, it's almost like when you look at somebody with tattoos and piercings, you automatically assume they're either a degenerate or a scumbag.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. They're not. I mean, that's just not the case. So
yeah.
the stigma follows, you know, not only treatment centers for, you know, trying to help people. Some people don't agree with rehab, no matter right. what, no matter what avenue you take. It's almost like medicated assisted recovery. Same
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
People don't approve mm-hmm. of, oh, you're not clean. You're just using a crutch. Well, who are you to say? It's one perception of another. And for me, it's a negative perception of another.
Okay.
Judgment.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like anybody should be judging another person.
Sure.
I feel like, you know, I'm not a very religious person, but we all got to answer to God at some point.
Yeah.
That'll be my judge, jury, and executioner should the day come.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, and it's not just on the individuals themselves, like, you know, Oxford houses. There's the neighbors,
Yeah.
Prime example. You know, mm-hmm. they threw a conniption fit over perception of what it was going to be like. They already had, like, planned it out in their mind what it was going to be like. My girls were making cookies to take to them.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? So they, you know, it's, I guess, making up your mind before you have the facts.
Yeah. That's a good description, I think. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, don't make up your mind without facts. And I'm a factual type person. I was a chef for 20 years.
Uh-huh.
So numbers for me work.
Yeah.
And our numbers for Oxford House, they work.
Yeah.
So time-tested, evidence-based.
Right. Why do you think it's, from your perspective, maybe share with us why you think it's important for us as a community to help end the stigma or educate ourselves so we're not having these misperceptions?
I feel like by sweeping it under the rug
uh-huh.
or trying to push it out to another community, you're avoiding it. It's yeah. still there. It's still in your family. Most of the people that complain mm-hmm. about addiction and what we do, they have active addicts or alcoholics in their family.
Yeah.
So rather than be on board, they're trying to push everybody away. They didn't want it out of sight, out of mind. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
And I feel like, yeah, raising awareness like this show right here, that people hear, the Recovery by the Bay event that we did,
uh-huh.
they need to turn out with an open mind and listen to what we have to say. Don't just shut it out. But yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, if people's ears and eyes and, you know, mouths are closed and they're not willing to.
And their hearts too.
Yeah. And their hearts, yeah. especially, they're not, you know, so I don't cry mm-hmm. over.
Yeah.
You know, apparently I got a big heart. So when I was sharing my story, I mean, like, I started crying and my mom freaked out, but you know, the guy that picked me up off the side of the ground that helped me get clean. And I made him a promise that day that I would stay clean. His name is John Wesley Boatwright. He's from Panama City. He was yeah. actually leaving Sacred Heart that day, but, I don't know where I was going with that. Just yeah.
Well, what I'm hearing is you have that connection.
Yeah. His story. So that community connection is super important, is what I'm hearing you say. That
well,
having those community connections
mm-hmm.
Are super important for the individuals in Oxford House as well as individuals that are going through their recovery process.
Right. So part of when individuals are in our houses, we try to teach them unity.
Mm-hmm.
Recovery first, unity, family, fun. Recovery doesn't yeah. have to be stressful, monotonous, like, man, this sucks, I'm sober. You know, yeah, have right. barbecues, crawfish boils, go yeah. canoeing.
Like you yeah. were telling us before we started recording that you do disc golf, you know,
yeah.
you get some hobbies, something.
Yeah, and I try to tell all my members, like, man, find a pastime. Sitting yeah. around stewing over all your past thoughts, trying to, you know, fix the past and read the future, you're going to go insane.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I tried that for years with no success.
Yeah.
So, and I think, you know, raising awareness, one, you know, these people will turn out for a city council meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Open hearts, open minds, open ears, and they'll yeah. voice everything. But they won't turn out to a community event that's full of network organizations and providers that are there to help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They won't. And that, for me, is just astounding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can't change people.
No.
Right. Right. And I'm finding that even in, like, my yogi community, because I'm a yoga teacher as well. So in our community, there is a lot of sober living transition happening for people that, you know, maybe aren't suffering with specifically addiction, but just making changes and coming out of using any kind of, you know, alcohol, smoking, anything like marijuana or something like that. They're going, a lot of people are just gravitating toward that sober lifestyle. So I think that's actually becoming more prevalent, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think that technology is going to be the death of man, honestly. Like TikTok, Twitter, people are so people are so yes. nosy these days.
Right.
People can't just mind their business.
Oh, keyboard warriors too, right? I mean, that's just so much easier to type something on a
it is.
You know, on a social media post yeah. than to say it to someone's face,
yes.
right?
That's confront it head yeah. on. And I grew up in the 80s and 90s. You know, I mean, I'm 40, almost 41 years of age.
Oh, so old.
No, no. Like, but what I was going to say was, is I grew up in a great generation.
Yeah.
You know, the 80s were awesome. Yeah. The 90s were awesome. I had fun growing up.
Yeah. Right.
And I feel like, you know, kids these days, the first thing they want is a cell phone.
Yes.
They don't want to get on a bicycle and trek across town.
No.
You know, right. They don't want to do what we did as kids. Go outside and play till the lights come on. And then, yeah, oh, right. Hey, can I go have a sleepover and go ham?
Yeah.
You know, it was different for all of us growing up.
Yeah.
And then when technology just started coming out more and more frequent, like, I mean, you can do so many things on a cell phone nowadays.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For
like,
sure.
And it's, I mean, yes, it's a blessing and a curse.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
So. To have, sometimes you just don't need all that information right at your fingertips.
Exactly.
Or the distraction. I find that that's, you know.
Yeah.
Absolutely. For sure.
Okay. So let's jump back into more about the Oxford House. So you said that it's democratically run. Excuse me. So explain how does that work?
So we run off of a quorum. So. I think that's the term. Yes. Like, mm-hmm. Essentially like Congress.
Uh-huh.
Motion, second, all in favor, passed. We have our elected House officers. We have a House president who presides over the weekly House meeting, ensures that, you know, make sure all the House officers are doing their positions correctly,
uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Organizes the interviews for the House for new admissions. But yes, everything in the House is done by vote, especially admission of new members, which... To be admitted into an Oxford House as a new member, you have to get an 80% vote and go through the interview process. It's not like, oh, I got my money, here I am.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, there's an interview process. It's very painless, but as long as you're upfront and honest.
Is the whole House involved in the interview?
Yes.
So it's like a group interview?
Yeah, yes. So we get a lot of like phone call interviews because uh-huh. most people are in treatment, and it's hard for the treatment center to let them leave
sure.
when it's inpatient to come to the house. So they do a lot of phone interviews. Now, some houses, you know, they kind of frown upon phone interviews because you can't read body language. You can't see their face, see if they're lying. You know, people have telltale sounds.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But nonetheless, we still do it. And, you know, we have reentry members coming out of prison or jail. Their applications get emailed to the House, and they will have to vote based on a paper application, because at the end of the day, we want to try to help as many people as possible.
Yeah.
You know, I teach all my houses to keep an open mind. But yes, we are democratically ran. 100%.
Sounds like a board of directors almost, doesn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was thinking.
It is.
So do you have a treasurer that
we
keeps,
do. Treasurer,
you know, watches
comptroller.
The finances, probably a secretary
yeah.
that keeps
yep.
the notes of the meeting
yep.
And so when I was watching a video about just the Oxford House model, I noticed or heard the term service structure. So is that in a House manual? Can you tell us a little bit more about those things?
So the members, they're elected into those positions by the current members of the House.
Okay.
They do not serve for a period longer than 6 months.
Oh, that I meant to ask that
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and they switch.
Uh-huh.
There are positions of service. They are mm-hmm. not positions of authority. Because as I said before, we have no house bosses. We have no managers, nothing. No one member can approach another member and be like, you have to leave or you have to do this. No,
yeah.
that's a house decision.
Yeah.
Right.
Everything from, like I said, admission of new members to like doing a monthly house shop, say they want to upgrade the TV, say they want to go on a canoe trip, the whole house votes on that.
Uh-huh.
And if everybody is current on their EES and they want to spend that money to go out or
so
do
they have
whatever.
Some like house funds that they could spend on.
So the house members.
Activities.
Yeah. Well, what they do is every member, every week at the house meeting, they pay their EES.
Uh-huh.
The treasurer takes the EES. We only take money orders. We're self-pay only, no insurance. Mm-hmm. I saw that was on there. So
yeah,
I'm going to hit
yeah.
that.
Yeah. How people pay for this?
Yes.
You know, it's always a question that people ask.
Yeah.
How do you pay for
right.
you know, services?
Yeah, so it's self-pay only. We don't take cash or personal checks. It has to be a money order, mm-hmm. Which you can get money orders from various places.
Sure.
They take those money orders. They deposit them into their joint bank account at Regions.
Okay.
They each one of our houses has its own tax ID number, which is used for banking purposes only. But out of that bank account, they use that to pay the rent for the house because we do lease the house. We power, water, cable.
All the bills that come with living at home. I mean, in a house. Yeah.
So their EES is literally their equal expenses shared. It's everything that I list when I open the house. I will say, you know, 10 guys at $150 a week, you know, times four. You know, I'll do the math on a viability calculator, and they will have to adjust their EES accordingly if they don't keep the beds filled. And they also pay chapter dues on the beds and state association dues.
Okay.
So once a month, we have a chapter meeting. That's where all the houses come together, and we discuss the health and stability of
each house. So, like, the houses in the city or just a general area?
I mean, three or more houses in a 50-mile radius make up a chapter.
Okay.
Okay.
This is Chapter 10.
Okay.
Panama City is. Chapter 2 is Pensacola. Chapter 3 is Tallahassee. Chapter 5 is Jacksonville, and then I get kind of lost after that.
It's like Central Florida and South Florida.
So I think we're up to 12 chapters now in Florida. But we're steadily growing. I mean, fast. Yeah. I mean, I work with a great group of staff members. Everybody works hard. When we need to open houses, we get them open.
So you have three houses here in this chapter.
I have four here.
Oh, wow. Okay.
About to be five.
Oh, awesome.
That's fantastic.
I'm working on one right now, and I'm hoping it'll close today. Or we can get it finalized to close today. I thought I read the text message yesterday that it was closing, but it says we're getting close.
Oh, okay.
Whoops. But it's a beautiful home. It's in a good neighborhood. It's close to my house. I already have people that want to move into it. And it's got a nice big yard. The neighbors aren't, like, right next to them. You know, I pray for all these people that are so angry. Like, is your life that shot out? You just can't be understanding or sympathetic or anything? I don't know how jaded. I mean, I was a jaded human being. And I still am to a degree. I just don't get it. Moving on.
Okay, so tell us about, now I read about that everyone has chores to do in the house. Maybe they might be fined if they don't do their chores, which I think I might start doing at my house.
You know, it's funny. So we do have a chore coordinator whose his duties are you know, assigning weekly chores and signing off to make sure they're done. He also, you know, keeps track of, you know, does a house need coffee, creamer, sugar, toilet paper, paper towels, things like that. Weekly or monthly house shop. And yes, the fines do come into play. So we'll use my house for an example. They didn't start out fining. They started out like warning and warning and warning and just kept warning. They wouldn't implement the fines. So they would vote on, man, we're going to start fining. So, and they never did. They never followed through, and it started biting them in the rear. So finally, they're like, all right, man, you start hitting somebody in the pocket, they listen. Believe it or not, you start, all right, man, $20, $50, $50. I mean, we had a guy that got fined $200 over 7 days.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Well, because if you leave the front door unlocked, that's 50.
Yeah.
You leave the garage door unlocked, 50. You don't clean the lint trap out, 50.
Oh, my gosh.
It didn't start out at 50. The front door has always been 50, but like the lint trap, it was 5, then 10, and people just kept neglecting it.
It's a fire hazard.
It is. Believe it or not, it is. And, you know, it's meant to teach them. It's there to correct the behaviors. Slow down. Take your time. Pay attention to what you're doing. You know, we get so caught up in, oh, I got to get my life back together. Oh, I need this. Like, patience, man. Like, you spend years walking into the woods of addiction. You're not going to walk out overnight. You know, I'm still putting my life back together almost 3 years later. Because I did a lot of damage. So I try to tell them to be patient, but at the end of the day, some listen, some don't.
But, So, and then the fines go into the house account? Is that how that works?
Yes. And if they, so the house has to vote on the fines. Uh-huh. So, like, say we lived in a house and I saw you didn't do your nightly kitchen duty. I'd be like, I motion to fine Amy.
Yeah.
She would have to second. The president would say all in favor. And if the whole house voted yes, you would get a fine. The next week, it would be tacked on to your weekly EES.
Okay.
So, and then, yes, it would go into the bank account. So the fines actually help the house when people misbehave.
Right. Because then you have a little bit of a coffer for different maybe improvements or something for the house.
Yep. Yeah. They can upgrade the beds, TVs, refrigerators. They can do whatever they want. I mean, like my house paid for a landscaping crew. They ended up firing them because they weren't doing a good job. But yeah.
Yeah. Struggle is real, I think, for everyone on that one.
It truly is.
Okay, so we've covered how it's paid for. Everyone pays for themselves. There's no insurance involved. And so you were saying you were in an inpatient treatment program. So do most people come from an inpatient treatment program?
Yes.
To an Oxford house? I mean, they need to do some sort of...
So it's not mandatory that you go through treatment.
Okay.
Now, it depends. It's up to the house because the house is a fully autonomous, democratically ran and self-supporting. So if they want you to do a stint in detox or rehab, that's up to them.
That's really interesting to me. I think it's really great, but it's very interesting. It's a different concept. It's not what you're used to. So traditional, I think, around here is that you go to some sort of inpatient treatment and then you go to some sort of outpatient treatment and moving on.
Well, if you're coming off of 2 years of heroin use, you need to go to treatment because you need medical professionals to help you with that detoxification process.
Uh-huh.
And I know that because I went through that.
Uh-huh.
And not only that, but I was coming off of alcohol. Now, if I had went and sat in an Oxford house, not only would I not have detoxed around medical professionals, I probably would have relapsed time and time again. I could have died.
Yeah.
Because I was heavily medicated during my detox period.
Yeah.
But I was also coming out of an intensive care unit, things like that. But so, yes, it's a case by case basis, but it's recommended you do detox and rehab.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to the house. I mean, there's outreach staff that were literally 24 hours clean coming into an Oxford house, and now they're senior outreach coordinators.
Wow.
So it's just up to the house what they want to do.
How long do people typically stay in an Oxford house?
I get asked that a lot.
And I'm sure it's, depends on each individual, but if...
It does. I would say it depends on somewhat the time of year.
Uh-huh.
Because when it's cold outside, people want a warm place to sleep.
Yeah.
Right. So they might stay longer. Lately... So the guys in my house have been there about 6 months, the guys that have stayed. Now, is that to say that we haven't had numerous people relapse and leave? We absolutely have.
Mm-hmm.
Because people come in, they don't want to follow the model, which means going to meetings, doing your chores, paying your bills. They don't want to abide by the laws.
Mm-hmm.
So they end up no longer being a member. But I would say 6 to 12 months. And, the DePaul University study showed that members that came in and worked the model as it was written stayed for a period of, I think, 12 to 18 months. And if they left on good standing, 3 years later, they were still clean. And that was an 87% success rate.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So,
fantastic.
I mean, I feel like you give me numbers like that versus most treatment centers, 20%.
Yeah.
I'll take an Oxford house any day of the week.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and the treatment center I went to, there was not a lot. They tried to cram a lot down your throat in a very, I was there 32 days.
Mm-hmm.
The 7 of those days were spent in a detox room, coming off of all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
But the remaining 3 weeks, they do have like a 1 AA meeting, which was okay. But there's not a lot of emphasis on, actual recovery. I spent most of my time with a counselor.
Yeah.
Who was amazing, by the way.
Yeah.
I really did enjoy talking with her. And she got me to address some personal issues that I had been long... They need to be addressed.
Yeah.
But I got over that while I was in rehab. And it, it think had I not done that, I don't think I would be clean today. So it, what it was helpful, and yeah. I feel like if the biggest thing that I see with people in recovery, they don't want to be honest with those around them and themselves.
Yeah,
it, like honesty and patience, man. Like be honest. Like some people just don't want to accept they're a full blown addict or alcoholic. Like yes, man. If you've been to rehab more than once,
yeah,
you're an addict or yeah. an alcoholic.
Yeah,
you know, mm-hmm. it's just the nature of it. Oh, I can control it. No, you can't. Not if you're going to rehab.
Yeah.
So we, I mean, we try to hold them accountable the best we can. I don't know. Doesn't always work.
Yeah. So do they? When you're in an Oxford house, do you still continue at AA or is it NA is another one, right? Or do you
yes.
have groups, support groups within the house too?
So we do not host support groups in the house. Uh-huh. But that's not to say that they can't have like an outside speaker come in and talk with them. But they don't host meetings in the house. They're uh-huh. They are required to attend. They're required to work a program of recovery, be uh-huh. it Smart Recovery, AA, NA.
What's Smart Recovery?
I think it's more of like a mentorship.
Okay.
Like you have like a mentor that kind of helps you along. I don't think there's a lot of, I don't know a whole lot about it.
Okay.
I don't think it's a whole lot.
I have not
of,
heard it before.
Yeah. I don't think there's a lot of emphasis on like 12 steps in it.
Okay.
I think they try to get to like, say I'm having an issue with something or somebody, they get to the core of why I'm having the issue.
Uh-huh.
And mm-hmm. your mentor kind of helps you attack and dive into that and deal with it.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how effective it is. I've never used it. I'm an AA man all around.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Is it?
My favorite yeah. 1 year. I hit the 1 year mark, and I mean, I got more than that, but
yeah.
that's the one that I just keep on me because it was near and dear to me. I didn't think I was going to make it a year, and I did.
Yeah.
But yeah, they are required to work a program of recovery first and foremost. And that, like, so when members first come into the house, they're on what we call newcomer restriction, which means they have to go to recovery meetings, AA or NA, take your pick, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But 5 a week, you got to get a sign-in sheet signed. If you go to your IOP, intensive outpatient, you have to follow through with that, which mm-hmm. qualifies as recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Church, we allow church 1 time a week for that. And each time while you're on newcomer, you'd have to get the chairperson of that meeting to sign off that you were actually there.
Mm-hmm.
Because back to us being manipulative.
Yeah.
We'll be and like, yeah, man, I was there.
Yeah.
And we have people do that.
Yeah. Accountability. Yeah. That's
yes.
Yeah.
Accountability. And it's not there to embarrass them, which some people take it that way. It's
sure.
there to hold them accountable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's that's important.
I think that's important. I mean,
in life in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, and it's there. So the first 30 days is the most critical for any new member.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like a courting phase to see how well you adjust to the house. Are you going to do what you said you were going to do? Or do you get along with the house?
Uh-huh.
Because most houses you walk into, like my house, there's a core group of guys that have been there for a little while.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, you come in, you can have a voice, but if you're just all around disrupting the entire house, you're not going to be there very
well. That's not going to help anybody. I mean,
no,
right?
it's counterproductive.
Exactly.
Right. Because I imagine that you're trying to establish a very peaceful, easy flowing household mm-hmm. that has very little stress amongst the members.
Absolutely.
And everyone holds everyone accountable and people do what they say they're going to do, et cetera. So,
conflict resolution.
Yeah. And support yeah. each other, I think, through it too,
absolutely.
I would imagine.
It's a very peer supportive environment. You know, some of the best people that I have been around have been in Oxford houses.
Okay, so you told us about how people get into an Oxford house, so they apply. No, I was wondering if you had a wait list.
All right, so
how does that work for you guys?
Well, yes, we have wait lists, and it depends on the house.
Mm-hmm.
If the house, you know, if they stay consistently full and have a wait list, they'll try to direct them to another house, and hopefully they can get in.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're all full, they just all have a wait list. I mean, it's not like an area-wide wait list. It's a house-by-house wait list. Each house has their own waiting list.
Okay.
Because, like, you can't interview at Oxford House Panama City and then come into Oxford House Mako.
Okay.
Because the members at Oxford House Mako did
very
not.
Different, yeah.
And they didn't right. interview you.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So you have to interview for the house, designated house you're trying to get into, and be on that waiting list. You can interview for all of them, be on all the waiting lists you want to, uh-huh. assuming you get accepted.
Yeah,
right. That was what I was going to ask is, can there be, does the Oxford House model allow for, say, another house if the wait list at different houses are long enough, if you have enough people that are waiting, that a new house will be open if it becomes available?
Yep.
Okay.
That's what I'm doing right now. My men's houses stay full, and there's waiting lists, so I'm opening another men's house.
So the you said there's a men's house, but then you also mentioned women, and is there and then maybe women and children?
I have three men's houses and uh-huh. a women and children's house.
Uh huh.
And I know the women, if they hear this, they're sugar palms. Woo woo. It's Oxford House sugar palms.
Look, and they're cookie bakers. Is that what I heard before?
Nah. So like Kylie, my house president over there, she's great. She does a good job with them girls. She's been an absolute godsend to the house because it was in utter almost chaos before she got there.
Uh-huh.
And between her and her friend Jessica that came in with her, the house has done, like, for the members that have stayed and not relapsed, the house has done great.
And they can bring their children with them?
So, yes, it's
tell us a little about that. Tell us a little about that.
So, it's a 9-woman house, and it is a women and children's house. And the reason we have designations as, like, men and children, women and children, women, and then just men
uh-huh.
is because there's different guidelines per house. Mm-hmm. So, women and children's houses, guidelines, you're not allowed to have any significant others. They're basically not supposed to be any sexual activity on the premises.
Yeah.
Because there's children living there.
Yeah.
And I think we realize where children come from, but yeah, that's right. Nonetheless,
yeah.
No, they're not allowed to be in the bedrooms. They are allowed to be in the house, just not in the bedrooms. Mm-hmm. There's not to be any more than 4 children to the house added to the 9 women.
Okay.
So we don't allow all 9 women to have their children.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And if we say the house is full with all women and children, just got to open another house.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just what I have to do. That's my job.
Well, I think it's really important. I think it was another episode we had Care on, and we were talking about, you know, parenting is really a struggle. And, you know, when you're recovering from addiction, that, you know, you can't just ignore the fact that you're a parent and that you need, you know, that you have those obligations and the stress that comes along with parenting. So I think that's probably very helpful to help these women recover.
Yeah, and it is. And, you know, should they have a case plan with Department of Children and Families? They're uh-huh. absolutely, most of them want to cooperate with that, but yeah. they're required to per the house guidelines.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, one of the girls that lives there, she just got her son back. Mm-hmm. So we try to help them make that happen. You know, we fully cooperate with Department of Children and Families should they want to come see the house, the property.
Yeah.
We're not going to tell them no.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing
to hide.
I mean, yeah. I mean, my relationships with, you know, Department of Corrections, Department of Children and Families, treatment providers are much more valuable than one individual.
Right.
You know, so if they're going to, you know, squander away their chances, that's on them.
Yeah.
And yes. We have people that relapse, leave, and then they call their treatment center, man, at Oxford House, and they start bad-mouthing us, and then I get an angry phone call from a parent or a counselor.
Yeah.
Like, right. Why did this happen? Like, do you really take them at their word? They're intoxicated.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're always a liar, but there's always 3 sides. This side, the truth in the middle.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, at least from my perception, there is. Yeah. It doesn't happen a lot, but, you know, there are those families that want to continuously enable their loved ones.
Yeah.
And it's not helpful.
It really isn't. It's hard, though. I think that, you know, we've had addicts in our family, and it's hard when you finally just have to. For us, anyway, we just had to cut the strings.
Mm-hmm. Because My mom it just, did that.
Yeah, I think about that personally, and then, yeah. and then, before when we were talking about, yeah. you know, the opposite of addiction is connection, you know, you have guilt with that too. It's tough.
There is. So I have a question that kind of goes back to the children, the women and children. I know that there is, I'm seeing, you know, in my coaching, a lot of men who are now single dads. Is there a plan or an option with Oxford House for men that have children and the mother is not in the picture?
We have men with children's houses.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We don't have one here yet because the need is not there. And those exact individuals, I was one of those guys.
I mean, single dads are, you know, just because it's on the rise. That's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a lot of folks that are coming into my practice saying, you know, I want to do better for my kids. And so I think you probably see that in Oxford House as well, where the mom is just not in the picture anymore for various reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, I got, I think as it stands right now, I have one guy that is going through the reunification process with his child. Now, assuming that number grows, I will absolutely open up a men and children's house. Yeah. And like the guys, just like the women and children's house, they will have to understand no significant others in the bedrooms. The same guidelines apply.
Sure.
You know, there's no discrimination at Oxford House, you know, not for any reason.
And that's not what I was implying.
I was just
wondering if we had
if you're seeing that
option, because I'm seeing it. So I was wondering if you were seeing the same thing on your end as
I was talking about on their part, because guys will be like, what, my girl can't come over? No, your girl can't come over. She can come over, but she can sit in the living room.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so what I was curious about, I know you said with another study there was you had a pretty high success rate with people that stay in Oxford House from 12 to 18 months. Is that what you're seeing here in Panama City? And if you have any success stories that you'd like to share with us, besides your own, of course.
So, actually, yeah, I do. Guy that lives in my house now, he has... So when I first got back from Arizona, he was at Oxford House, Panama City. This was before I had established all the other houses in this chapter. His name is Adam. He's a friend of mine. He ended up starting up his own contracting business. He's had his longtime girl. She's pregnant now. He's got a kid on the way. Now he's about to be buying a house and he's leaving the Oxford House nest, so to speak. But he has absolutely grown, and it's been a pleasure to watch. He always had it together for the most part. He was a little rough around the edges as far as Oxford House knowledge when I got back, but that was due to, you know, the outreach coordinator at the time, or outreach worker at the time, she was in Pensacola. There was no women's house for her to stay at. She couldn't get the time over here and any of that, or they weren't listening. I don't know, but he came around and he has been absolutely instrumental in me getting all this going. Now, he still does work on the houses for me when I need it to happen.
Yeah.
He would be one. You know.
And I don't want to break any, like, privacy issues or anything like that. I was just curious. I mean, I think it's important for us to celebrate some of these successes and know that they're happening. Because I think so often, I don't know about your experience, Melissa, but... you know, I would say that the people in my life that have struggled with addiction, it's kind of 50-50 as far as they're recovering and being, you know, getting back in the community and being successful members in the community.
So the chapter's only been established, like my house hadn't even been open for a full year yet.
Okay.
Because it opened January 1st.
Oh, okay.
The next one followed in March.
Okay.
No, February. February 15th, matter of fact, right after Valentine's Day is when I opened up Sugar Palms. the one that put me all over the news. And then in May, it was when I opened up the one on the beach.
Okay.
Yeah. Which,
I hadn't realized that. It was so new to the area.
Well, the Oxford House Panama City has been there since 2020.
Okay.
But because of COVID and everything else going on, and, you know, the outreach worker at the time, I wasn't originally here. When I got hired by Oxford House, I went to Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay.
Florida was able to extend its contract and add another staff member, which ended up being me. I'm actually from Fort Walton Destin.
Oh, okay.
So Panama City's like my stomping ground, too.
Yeah.
And it's been real easy for me to come back, get into the recovery community, like, hey, man, you know. I know all these people, and some of them I went to high school with.
Yeah.
So, you know, being so new, the success stories are still in...
They're still in progress.
Yeah.
So, well, we'll just have to have you back on in a year or so and hear some more about it.
But as far as members that are doing outstanding and are growing exceptionally, I have quite a few. And a few of them have expressed interest in being an outreach worker.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think they quite fully understand what all that entails.
Yeah.
But, I didn't realize just how joined at the phone you have to be. Like, my phone is steadily going
Mr.
off.
Mr. Technology. Yeah. Pot, this is kettle.
Yeah. Right. Dude, there's times I want to throw this thing out of my car window. I don't care. It comes with the territory.
It does.
It is.
And it's just a way of life now, I think, careers. And Melissa and I were talking about that yesterday. I was telling her how sometimes I just turn off my phone and I set it down and then I'll pick it up and see all these texts. And then she happened to text me during the day. Was like, well, that's pretty funny. That's just exactly what I said happened.
Exactly. Because I do that. I consistently keep my phone on silent because of all the dings and I'm trying to work on things and I'm like, or I'm meetings, or I'm taping the show, or I'm doing something, like this with Amy, and it's just consistently going off. It's a distraction,
yeah,
a lot of times. And so when you didn't respond back, I was like, she put her phone down somewhere. Yeah. She's busy.
Yeah. Hey,
but I think it's just part of any professional's career. I mean, and part of just your daily life is just having, you have your email on your phone. Everything is on your phone.
It is. It's convenience.
Yeah.
I tell myself every time I go play disc golf, I ain't answering my phone. I'm turning it off. Two holes in, I'll be teeing off. Hey.
Right.
I've had to actually learn that, especially since Hurricane Michael, because I had like the high stress levels. I had like a lot of the adrenal fatigue that went around with that. And I realized that my phone was becoming a stressor and it was becoming kind of a control. It was like, I felt like I had to be on all the time.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't want to be on all the time. I want to be able to manage, who has access to me and when that is. And I needed to have space to actually breathe sometime in there. And so I got to the point where I would turn it off now I just keep it on silent.
Yeah.
So I'm not I can manage that time.
Yeah.
And manage the stress that comes from it. So then I'm not overwhelmed consistently.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
Yours is a little different, though, I think.
Get the magic red button. Decline, decline, decline. No. Not right now.
I actually love that my car just stops it from dinging the whole time I'm in the car. I'm
like,
that's fantastic. Puts it on do not disturb.
Yeah.
I was like, that's fantastic. I'll just listen to the radio.
So luxurious. Or maybe a podcast.
Or maybe a podcast.
Well, Chris, I want to thank you for coming on and telling us all about Oxford House. I really enjoyed having you on and learning more. This is an important topic, to cover in our community. And I just thank you for, for what you're doing. And I thank you for sharing your story with us and being so open. Yeah. I hope that people listening to this will, like we said, keep an open mind and open heart and understand that, we all have a vested interest in helping people recover from addiction, because I think they're better employees, they're better parents, they're better community members, and and we all win, right?
We do.
We all win when that happens.
Yep. And have a healthier Bay County.
Well, yes.
Exactly.
A healthier Bay County.
Why? I don't know anybody that wants to spit in the face of help. Like assistance. We're here to help. We're not charging you for it.
Right.
Right.
So,
and I think it's a great opportunity for Bay County to really grow and become healthier and do this in a way that is so, like you said, self-sustaining.
Mm-hmm. All that money.
I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, all that money they're spending on these private attorneys. How about you fix some of these roads?
I was thinking about that. Or just, anyway, so if anyone wants to get in touch with the Oxford House, what is the process of doing that?
All right. So there are multiple ways.
Okay.
So you can go to Oxford House Inc. or OxfordHouse.inc.com, I think, or .org. Yeah.
Okay.
You can go to our vacancy website if you're trying to get into a house, which is www.oxfordvacancies.com. It is very user-friendly. Just follow the three prompts at the top of the screen. It'll ask for the state, the county, and the gender.
Uh-huh.
And it'll pull up a list of all the houses in that area. And it'll have a direct contact number for usually the house president or whatever, whoever they designate to be the house contact for you to set up an interview to get into the house.
Okay.
And assuming that doesn't work, there's a national directory. I think it's on the OxfordHouseInc.org website where it has my number on it.
Okay.
And we have brochures and all types of information we consistently pass out. But yeah.
Okay.
That would be it.
Great.
And one last question for me. If the community wanted to do something to help you or helps one of the houses or the houses, what would be the one thing that you would, or two things?
So if there were two things that the community could absolutely do to help us, like, just let us flourish and thrive, one. And two, we always need dressers and nightstands.
Good to know.
Always. When I open houses, that is like the two hardest things for me to get a hold of.
Oh, my
dressers
gosh.
Dressers and nightstands. That's a great
always.
Thing.
Yeah. Tyndall Air Force Base. Shout out to Tyndall. Thank you, guys. They actually donated a bunch of cabinets and nightstands.
Oh, was it from when they switched out some of the
dorms?
Furniture from the dorms? Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, that's great. Yay. That's good to know.
So
now I know whenever people ask me on Facebook, they're like, do you need this? I'll be like, no, but I know a guy.
My son's in the military, and I was thrilled when I got that phone call.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's awesome. All right. Well, for more information about today's episode and other resources, you can visit our website, howyoudoin.org, or visit the ABC Facebook page. And, I have to say, we'd like to thank Emerald Coast Behavioral Hospital for sponsoring this episode. Whoop, whoop. We have a little sponsor for a few episodes, which is really fun. And we'll have all the information that Chris gave us linked on our Facebook page and the website as well. Friends, thank you for listening. After everything our community has been through, it's so important for us to check in on each other. When you see your neighbor, your friend, your coworker, whoever, we encourage you to take the time to ask them, how you doing? How You Doin' Bay County is meant for informational purposes only and should not be substituted for mental health care from a licensed professional. And last but not least, this podcast is produced by the talented students in the digital media program at Gulf Coast State College.